leaving. Hope comes and stops us in our tracks. Bravely we prove in our striving, trudging together each day. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Raw Recovery, a Trudging Together podcast. My name is Dion. I'm going to be your host, and I am back. Dion's back again. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? I have Steph on the show today. I've known Steph for, has it been a couple years now, hasn't it? How long have you been going to 3 p.m.?
At least a year and a half.
At least a year. And we've really gotten to know each other. And we've tried to do this a couple of times. We've had some hits, misses, moving, illnesses. So what's great about AA is it happens in God's time. And when things happen in God's time, perfection ensues. That's what's great about God. So I've known Steph for a little bit. We go to the same home group. And wow, what a fantastic group. I love that group. We do amazing things there. We help a lot of newcomers. We help a lot of newcomers, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I call it the Wild West meeting.
It is, because we can have anywhere from 25 to 70 people there. Mm-hmm. It is huge. So I digress. It's not what we're here for. 3 p.m. Hit the 3 p.m. So I've gotten glimpses of Steph's story, and I'm very excited for this interview, because Steph and I get along really well. We have the same kind of mindset. So I'm real interested to see how this is going to turn out. This is the portion of the show where Dion turns over the show. As everybody knows, we do things a little differently here. This is not the Dion podcast. It is about whoever is speaking for that day. So, Steph, the show is yours. Welcome to your podcast.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a culmination of a lifetime, and I turned 60 this year in October. Yeah. So it's a good time to look at this stuff.
Yeah. You know, I found I'm 53 now, and I just want to give everything away. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel nowadays. You know, it's just all the wisdom that I have, I just want to give it away and hope that people don't go through the last years of hell that we went through. Huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I kind of feel like it's interesting. I've been having these glimpses lately that we are superheroes.
Yeah.
We truly do have a superpower. And I think about the man in the bed.
Yeah.
And I think of that painting or picture sketching of Bob and Bill leaning forward and the man in the bed. And it's so interesting to me how much power there is between one alcoholic helping another, or alcoholics working with each other.
Yes.
That identification that I longed for, that I couldn't find in the bottle, and that I couldn't find in those dark bar rooms, and that super power that we have, the treatment centers don't have it. The treatment centers send the alcoholics to us, to AA.
That's right.
Because it's a spiritual solution and it's a spiritual program. And I can, that all that self-knowledge availed me nothing. And I can learn all about my triggers and, all these things. But at the end of the day,
Yeah.
That's not what keeps me sober. That's not what made me drink. It's definitely the spiritual solution.
I agree, because I find that there's more success in treatment centers that are 12-step based. We've got a couple in Colorado, and they do real well. Their success rate is very high. And you can tell because they have a good alumni group.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how that fits in with the traditions, but I do have to say that when I went to treatment with my second DUI, I did IOP, and it was a 2-year deal.
Yep.
Because I got my second DUI when I was under probation from my first.
Whoa.
And because I was on probation when I got I got slapped really, really hard.
Yep.
And I had the blow and go for over 5 years in my car. And 2 years of, and I did have the accountability was there because I had to go and pee once a week and random.
Yeah.
But I was there, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 nights a week for 4 or 5 hours. And it was a big deal, but I just remember because I was newly sober, you know, I got sober in my bedroom by myself after I got out of the jail and, you know, I went through the DTs and one of the things, I was, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks. No. By the time I got into the treatment, I had been in AA for about a month, but it took me about 2 weeks before I stumbled into an AA meeting. And I knew that I was going to be court ordered to go.
Absolutely.
But I went first to be sober and to, you know, to get help.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I got ordered to treatment like 6 weeks later. But what was interesting to me about treatment, and this is a controversial thing in our program.
It is.
But I believe that there were only about 3 of us out of like 35, 40 people that were alcoholic. The rest of them were mostly opiate addicts.
Yeah.
And they were there for drug court. And it was interesting because I would go outside and smoke with them.
Okay.
And it was different.
Yeah.
There was a different feeling with them than there was with the alcoholic.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are all fruit, but it's apples and oranges.
And I hear what you're saying. I want to qualify something just real quick and let the audience know that Steph has decided that what we're going to do today is talk about things we don't usually talk about in AA and things. Mm-hmm. So we're going to hear some of her story, but it's going to be tied in with topics here. So I just kind of let people know because they're probably like, well, where were you born? Yeah. So
that's what,
and so we're going to do that today. So I hear what you're saying because it's like, okay, so if we have a 12-step based treatment center, are we going against the traditions? Now, the other thing is also is alcoholism is different than drug addiction. Not anybody can be an alcoholic. We are, and when we say special, that's what we're talking about. But anybody can be a drug addict. Anybody. I can be a drug addict. My wife can be a drug addict. She's a goody two shoes. So that's what we're talking about here. Am I right on that? Where that's why it feels different because we talk a different language.
Yeah. And for me, it goes deeper than that.
Okay.
I believe there's behavioral characteristics as well.
Agreed.
And I believe that that's why when I came into AA and they said to me, welcome home, I felt there was the sameness there that I don't feel in the, with the drug, the opiate addicts. And I know that they have the same solution as we do.
Sure.
But I also do believe that there is something very strong about the identification of
I agree.
the alcoholic. And I think it really helped me that my sponsor was an alcoholic.
Yes.
And it just, and maybe, you know, that will change in my viewpoint right now, because it is a hot topic and a contentious one. And I think that there's more to be said about that.
Sure.
I will go in a little bit just to say a little bit about my story about, I grew up in an alcoholic home.
Okay.
And I got married at a young age. I got married when I was 19.
Okay.
And I married a man who, we weren't drinking, but he became alcoholic.
Okay.
And I was married for 21 years to an alcoholic. They call us double winners or
triple winners.
I think I'm a triple winner.
Yeah. You and I are triple and quadruple winners.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I have been around this disease my whole life.
Yeah.
And I did everything I could not to drink. And the times that I did drink in my youth was not a normal drinking. It was, it resulted in a blackout, or it resulted in a not a normal situation. I remember when I turned 21, I went out to drink because I was turning 21.
Sure, right about.
And that was a weird thing for me because I drank all night and never got a buzz.
Not surprising.
And there's been weird things in our bodies. It's just a weird, and it just was weird, you know? And so I had weird experiences with alcohol, but I stayed away from it because I hated it so much.
Okay.
Because of what it did to my parents.
Your parents. Yeah.
And also I saw it take my husband, and it caused a divorce, 21 years of marriage. And that's, you know, we divorced.
Yeah.
Two children. The youngest was 3 when we divorced.
Okay.
And it wasn't until I started going out with girlfriends and in my early 40s, newly divorced, started going out and hearing live music, had some friends that were musicians, kind of followed the band.
Yeah.
I was starting to drink more because just going out more, people would be ordering me drinks.
Yeah.
When I first started going out, it was one or two drinks. And within probably 6 or 8 months, I was drinking really fast. And people were noticing that friends of mine would come up and say, "You're drinking too fast." And I would just argue, "No, I'm not." I didn't even see it. I didn't notice it. And so for me, I believe I had those alcoholic tendencies, or I was an alcoholic already and just hadn't drank yet.
Well, a really good indicator, and that was me too. The first time I drank, you know, my friends had like a beer. I had like 4 and they were worse off than me. You know, so when I started drinking, I always had a high tolerance for alcohol. And that's the first sign of alcoholism. That you have a high, it's already built in.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like we're born with this. I feel like I was born with this disease.
I believe also that there's a sugar component with me. And I was a kid, and people don't talk about this in the rooms either very much.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I had a candy problem.
Yep.
Like a serious candy problem. And I remember, gosh, I would probably 5th grade or something, I was hiding candy in my dresser drawers, hoarding it.
Yeah.
Hoarding it.
Did you feel like you weren't getting enough or something? Was there not enough food on the table? Or
no, I don't know. It was an addiction already. Okay. It was addictive quality. But it's interesting because when I started drinking in my 40s, the sugar, it helped my sugar craving. It gave me the sugar that I needed.
Yeah.
And it was almost like I was craving that sugar my whole life, that alcohol, and I was getting it with candy.
Yep.
It's a weird thing. It has been linked.
No, I understand. I get it. I get it because it's the same for me. And I wonder how much sugar has to do
That's why we eat sugar when we get sober. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Because, absolutely. Well, alcohol is 80% sugar.
Yeah. And so. And it is it's like the body, my body was craving the alcohol as a young kid, and it was getting the sugar, and you know, that was all I could get at that time.
Sure. Well, it gave you that high, that instant high you kind of wanted to with the sugar.
I think it goes into the brain chemistry in a similar way, maybe.
Good point. Yeah, where it hits that dopamine.
Reheating my coffee. I'm being loud. Sorry. Okay.
No worries.
Yeah, I have. So what happened to me is 2 years ago, I had a weird thing happen to me. I had a brain injury.
Okay.
It's not really a stroke, but it's like a blood clot happened in my brain stem. And I ended up with, for about 6 months, I had some seizures and some weird stuff.
Oh, man.
And it affected my cognitive ability.
Okay.
And so I have ADD really bad now.
Ooh, okay.
And so I bounce around from topic to topic. I have a hard time carrying my train of thought, those kinds of things. And it is, you know, a brain injury. And I don't know, you know, I think it's gotten a little bit better, but I think it's leveled off. I think
you've been doing great here. No, you've stayed right on topic and everything here. You're doing great.
Well, I'm at the stage of acceptance with it. And that's what I wanted to talk about today.
Okay.
Acceptance.
Let's do that.
And for me, what I've come to realize, oh, by the way, see, I'm bouncing around. I got sober from my second DUI, and my sobriety date is December 3rd, 2016. And I have been sober for over 7 years now.
Yep. Coming up on 8.
Yep. And for me, acceptance is surrender.
Yep. It absolutely is.
And my whole problem that I've noticed, most of my character defects and all the stuff that I've been, you know, looking at with working the steps come down to acceptance and not trying to, you know, control things. And that's the first step being acceptance.
Yeah.
You know, accepting that I am an alcoholic. And accepting that I cannot drink like other people, and that I am physically and mentally different than others. And that is the biggest, I just keep going back to step one. I feel like it seems to be the answer.
Well, it
does. To a lot of my struggles.
It is. Well, you know, when you get into the program, and you accept the fact that you're an alcoholic, or you become aware, these all mean the same thing. You are absolutely correct on that. Then our higher power gives us that perfect release from alcohol. Sure, I have willpower over a lot of my other problems, but why at this point? Mm-hmm. But why? Why not just go ahead and give it all to God then? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's an attitude, and of course it precedes action.
Yes,
and
it does.
And it always action always has to follow it.
Yeah.
Or it's very short lived.
Yes, that's what they say. Yeah.
I cannot stay sober without doing things. And it's the action, you know, part of the program that keeps me sober.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working the steps on a daily basis. And I love what I've heard you share in meetings. You really do get this deep down in your bones. And it is apparent every time you share, when you talk about, you know, the wax on, wax off, wax on, wax off. I love that. And it really helps me. And another thing that I have in my mind that helps me is hand on the plow.
Yeah.
Is that I just keep my hand on the plow.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, there's work involved with that.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to do until I hear, you know, until you know, my higher power speaks through you guys a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, wax on, wax off, hand on the plow. And what that is for me is steps 1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
You know, I can't, God can, I think I'll let him.
Yeah.
And so throughout my day, it's that attitude that I have to, and that's that acceptance, that surrender. That's the surrendering process to me. And it just goes on for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
Because I'm constantly, like what people say, of taking my will back, or I'm constantly trying to control the situation. And it's difficult because I realize that this controlling nature has to do with the way we're wired, the way I'm wired, and the way that I grew up in a very out of control home.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in a very out of control home. And so for me, being the oldest child of two alcoholics who are still drinking, by the way, you know, it's part of, you know, who we are. So and I think there's a lot of us, that, have experienced trauma. There's a lot of it. I was saying the other day, about going to a woman's retreat. And then that's when really people's guard came down, and we were, you know, around the fire in our pajamas, and women were talking about things. And there is a lot of trauma in Anonymous. People come in the doors, you know, we don't become alcoholic and drug addicts
overnight
because we're happy people.
That's right. Well, you know, and a lot of us, not every single one of us, but a lot of us grew up in alcoholic homes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my life has been, you know, I mean, even growing up, I had a lazy eye. I was a bedwetter till I was 11. These things are traumatic, you know, and they will go through us through the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great about the steps is they will relieve a lot of it, not all of it. AA doesn't do trauma. We need outside help. And that's when the professionals work best for us.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give a little bit of kudos to some professionals too. EMDR worked great for me.
Yeah. And I haven't had any of that. I have had unfortunate, you know, when I had my mastectomy 12 years ago, I was sent to a counselor, and it was never it was just a family counselor. And all she did was talk about, you know, take a bath and make sure you eat. And it was all about self-care. It was self-help kind of techniques. And, but it wasn't,
that isn't going to help you.
No. And so that kind of stuff is still, I believe, lurking in there, and it can be re-triggered in our life. Now, I had my PTSD from my childhood. I grew up in a violent home.
Okay.
I had it re-triggered when I was 25 years old.
I was
attacked in the face by a Rottweiler dog.
That'll do it.
Broke in my face. Stitches, you know, 6 tooth prints in my face.
Oh man.
I've had, you know, a lot of trauma to my body. You know, I had 3 surgeries in a, you know, 18 month period.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that stuff can get buried.
Yeah.
And what was interesting recently was, and I, this is a shout out to all the women out there. You know, I went through breast cancer twice, and the second time was a radical mastectomy 12 years ago.
God bless you.
And, about 3 weeks ago, a good friend of mine who helped get me sober, who helped sponsor me, passed away of breast cancer. And it was strange because on a Wednesday, I get the phone call that she passed away.
Okay.
And then 2 days later, my daughter, who's 33 years old,
yeah,
had to have a mammogram because they told her, you need to have mammograms early because your mother's had breast cancer twice, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So she went in at age 33 and had a mammogram, and then they found something in there and she had to have a biopsy. So 2 days later, this happens.
Yeah.
And it was just a strange thing. And then a sponsee of mine had an issue. It was like a cluster. We call them clusters.
Yeah, that's what we call it.
It was a clusterfuck. And it was almost like all these things like got put in my path, like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Boom. And what happened was it really spinned me out and it brought up some of that PTSD stuff.
Yeah.
And I realized, you know, even 7 years into this program that I haven't had any work on that stuff. And even though I've done a fourth and fifth step and I, you know, all those things, those kinds of things are like cellular, you know, and that is that's the kind of stuff that I don't really know that another human being could even, you know, other than some small techniques or something. But I think that the healing, it's got to come from a higher power.
You know, I think, you know, because I'm big on sayings, and I think this is a G.I. Joe situation where knowing is half the battle. And so I'm going to help out. Resentments and trauma are two different things, but people tend to confuse them, and you're not confusing them right now. I'm just bringing it up because I thought of it.
Yeah.
You know, that sometimes we tend to confuse trauma with a resentment. And people were telling me, you have a resentment. I'm like, this isn't a resentment. This is voices coming into my head telling me what to do. Mm-hmm. This is not a resentment. I can't help myself. You know, I would want to tell my wife that I love her, but it would come out, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everybody was the enemy. Mm-hmm. And it's like an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. It really is. Mm-hmm. But I tend to think, you know, we put ourselves in some sordid places to not come out with any trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Or some might say attachments.
Attachments. Yeah.
Attachment.
Emotional sobriety, man. That's serious stuff. Emotional sobriety and our attachments and manipulation to other people, you bet.
Well, and I look at it as, and here we go into another controversial subject. And this is good because I wanted to talk about this stuff. I've been wanting to talk about it with you.
Hard topics are normal for me.
I know that. And that's what I love about you, because you're so approachable. You are just so approachable. And the fact that we can be ourselves, you know, and it's kind of crazy stuff. So, okay. So let me digress just a little bit.
Absolutely. Because
I'm going to open up a can of worms that you might want to hold on to your ass.
Okay.
Okay. So I grew up in a haunted house.
Okay.
And not just did I experience things in that house, but my aunt and uncle grew up in that house, and they experienced things also, which I found out later. And then the people that moved into the house after my parents moved out and all that, they've experienced things in that house. In fact, I should turn it into the haunted registry. Definitely.
I listen to haunted stories when I go to bed at night.
See, I knew I was safe with you. So, my experience is that I really am in agreement with Carl Jung, mm-hmm. and his letter and his letter to Bill W. And for a lot of people that don't know that Carl Jung is the doctor that's referred to in our big book.
Yep.
And he was the one that treated Roland Hazard when he came. And that's really the beginning stages of AA.
Yeah.
It was years later, 1961, Bill W. wrote letters back and forth with Carl Jung.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl Jung, you know, he was a pretty smart guy.
Yep.
And he did talk about alcoholism as spiritus contra spiritum.
Yep.
Which is Latin. You know, fighting spirit with spirit.
Yeah.
And that this is, when I was talking earlier about an attachment, this is what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
That I do believe in angels and demons.
Absolutely.
And I don't go to church.
Man, you don't need to go
to church. They haven't been able to protect me there, so I don't go there.
Yeah.
But I do believe in angels and demons, and I do believe that that King Alcohol is an attachment, is a form of a demon.
It's a demon.
And I do believe that because there's a power there.
They're called spirits for a reason.
Yeah. And I call them hungry ghosts.
Yeah.
Hungry ghosts. And that's why when I'm in an elevator, I can feel when there's a hungry ghost in the elevator with us.
Yes. Yep. Because it'll attach to me. I feel it. There's been times when I'll be talking to my therapist and I'm like, right now I feel spiritually attacked. There is nothing going on, but I feel spiritually attacked, and it's the devil. I know it is, because I'm
you know, Carl Jung did talk about that it is, you know, evil. And you know, sometimes we go to AA meetings and people say the Lord's Prayer, and I've had people, you know, change the words, you know, to, you know, protect us from ego. And I'm like, no, don't say that.
No,
say evil. Because I do believe that there is evil.
I really do. How can there be good if there, you know, there needs to be, you know what? And here's the thing is, and I talk about this a lot, it's just that I use different words besides the devil. I use snakes and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because you say devil and people
yeah, it sounds
and they run. But it's just another freaking word to describe something.
Exactly. Yeah,
this is spiritual warfare for your soul.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's a spiritual solution.
And exactly. Mm-hmm. So, being superheroes, we're going to get back to that now.
Mm-hmm.
Being superhero, well, this is your show, but you know, I do want to finish off with that. But so that comes back to why one alcoholic can help another alcoholic like no one else can.
Mm-hmm.
That is why. And now we're seeing that because we understand. Mm-hmm. We talk a language. Mm-hmm. We talk a language of the heart, which only you and I get.
There's a recognizing of it.
Yeah.
And it's our heart recognizes that other suffering alcoholic. We can feel that they have that attachment on their soul, I do.
Yeah. And when you're somebody who's been lonely most of their life and you say welcome home, that's what we're talking. Mm-hmm. That's probably as close to describing what we go through as we can. Now take that and times it by about 10 and you'll start to feel how we feel.
Right. And also in the same letter, when Carl Jung talks about spiritus contra spiritum, which is the Latin for, you know, spirit fighting spirit, he also talks about the protective wall of human community.
Yep.
And that is what AA is, a protective wall of human community. And I tell sponsees that stay in the herd, stay in the middle of the herd.
Exactly what I say, in the middle of the herd. I still stay in the middle of the herd.
Yeah, King Alcohol is a predator and also grooming us.
Yeah.
Grooming us like a predator does.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, this sounds religious, but it's not.
But it's not.
It's not.
This is all spiritual.
It is spiritual. And I do believe that there are powers and principalities that we don't understand. and that I am on the winning side now.
Yep.
And that I did, and it's interesting, if anybody doesn't understand, if you've never been in a blackout, you explain to a person that's non-alcoholic about being in a blackout and the things that we can do in a blackout. It is just amazes me.
Yeah.
And if that's not a possession of some kind, then what is?
Exactly. I mean, we're literally walking around. We're still walking around when we should be dead or asleep. Mm-hmm. But because of the way, because we were born bodily and mentally different, normies will pass out before a blackout. You cannot have one, normies. It's physically impossible for you to do. That's what, and you know, so, I mean, yeah, just the severity people don't understand.
It's kind of baffling. But the thing is that, you know, the psychology and everything can only go so far. And
that's right.
Our big book really talks about that psychic change and having that spiritual experience. It is everything. That is my defense against the first drink.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people talk about, you know, that, oh, this isn't about alcohol. Yes, it is.
When I wake up in the morning, I still have the choice to go drink. So yes, it's very much about alcohol.
It is about alcohol because this attachment that I have to my soul that won't go away.
Which is a spirit.
It wants to drink through me. Yeah. It wants me to be a human straw for it.
It wants to see the world burn. That's how I feel when I'm drinking. I just want to see the world burn. And I would sit there and laugh. That's how evil somebody inside me is.
We can do is keep it at bay. I mean, really. One day at a time, staying on the beam.
Yeah.
Staying spiritually fit so that this demon doesn't try to come back in and take over again.
Yeah. And I think that comes back to acceptance again, awareness. I am aware of that in me. Mm-hmm. I know how dangerous I am.
That's right.
I have to reel it back.
That's right. And I have to always never take my eye off the ball.
Nope.
And never knowing that it's a predator and it's grooming me.
Yeah.
And it's using my brain to say, oh, you can just do this or you can, you know, it just,
And just how nonchalant it is about it is just scary. Mm-hmm. Scary. Oh, you can have 10 more drinks and get in a car. Don't worry about it. Wow. You know, it's like I say, if we blacked out and went and helped in soup kitchens, we wouldn't be having a problem. But that's not what happens. Mm-mm. That's not what happens. Evil ensues every time. Mm-hmm. Every time.
So, yeah. So I wanted to talk about it a little bit because it was that people get awkward about and it all of a sudden it brings up, you know, religious connotations and that. And I actually became a Catholic while I was drinking.
Sure.
Because I knew there was something evil going on with me. And I actually took classes. Of course, I was drinking the whole time. I became Catholic. You know, I tried everything and I could not get sober.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I did feel like at least they believed in the demons, the Catholics.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing is to deny is even worse. Right. To deny that it's going on. But, you know, I was even talking to my pastor about this. And, you know, I was telling her, you know, people in AA will just not, they won't go for the damnation. And she said, I don't preach that. My higher power, and that's what she said, my higher power doesn't make qualifications like that. And I'm like, so she is not religious. She is spiritual. Mm-hmm. You know, she might as well be in AA by the way that she talks and the way she presents herself, you know. I'd really like to talk about the suit. So now that we've talked about all this, let's talk about what happens when we do work together and we're superheroes, because I believe that we are chosen. And I think it is hard sometimes for people to accept that they are chosen, so they choose not to do it. And because it's hard to do. This is,
it comes with responsibility.
I'm sorry?
It comes with the responsibility.
Yeah.
And it is, yeah, but you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants,
absolutely,
you know? And this, you know, they talk about Bill Wilson being the greatest architect of the 20th century, of social movement architectural genius.
Sure.
And, you know, they talk about the internet. And when you think about what happened in the 20th century, AA came along. And we do stand on the shoulders of giants here. We
absolutely
really do.
We do. And, no, he was chosen for a reason. That's, and I'm not trying to get into, we should change the big book talk, but it's just an example of, you know, when they said we need to change the verbiage in the big book, I'm like, well, how are we going to do that? Because God chose Bill, and then he chose the 100 to work with it. And that's the whole, you know, that's the miracle of the book, is that 100 people wrote that. So how are we as human beings going to choose that? That it's beyond us.
Yeah.
And we, you know, it's written in.
It's a sacred text. I consider it a sacred text. So there's a lot of sacred texts. They shouldn't change any sacred text.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree.
AA has infiltrated. I mean, it is the largest organization in the world.
Right. And that, but I don't want to see it diluted down too much. And that's what I believe our primary purpose needs to be stated. And that, you know, that we are, our primary purpose is to help the still suffering alcoholic.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody is welcome, but it dilutes the message when people are in the rooms and they don't have a problem with alcohol.
I agree. I mean, I want to be helpful to everybody.
It's not a self-help program.
But exactly, it's a help yourself program. Oh, that's what I was going to say earlier. Once we do get well, though, that knowledge that we've accumulated before can come in handy now. But until you know how to help yourself, self-help books aren't any good. So,
no, because we get better by helping others.
And that's it. And that's why, you know, it says in working with others that nothing so much ensures immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. So I'm in self-pity. And what I hear people saying in the rooms is write a gratitude list. I'm like, no, go help another alcoholic, you know, because then you'll get gratitude out of it.
That's like, you know, the saints, you know, Mother Teresa and the people, and, you know, it is about helping others, and that's the way out.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the way out. But we don't want to help others until we have a psychic change.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have found, or at least this is what I've seen, is that when an alcoholic comes into AA, especially when they're forced, and then they find out that their drinking is affecting their family, because that's the biggest denial in AA or in alcoholics, is that we're not hurting other people. And once they figure that out, they want to change. But it's that denial portion that blocks us from seeing that. And I think that's where the spirits come in, and they say, oh, you don't need to see, you're not hurting anybody. You're drinking by yourself in the bedroom. You haven't showered in a week. And it seems normal.
Yeah, no, it's something that definitely crossed the line at some point. And they talk about us being cucumbers and becoming pickled. And once you're pickled, you can never be a cucumber again. And that is the truth, that once you're alcoholic, you can never drink like a regular person can.
Yeah.
And that's true. But it goes beyond that, because we are not just horses. We are like those unicorns. We are special creatures.
We are.
That's the superpower, the superhero.
Yep. But being a superhero, it comes with sacrifice. That's the word I'm looking for. I don't want to say it comes with, you know, doing that, but sacrifice, I think, is the right word. I sacrifice mostly my time.
Yeah.
And my time, and I find my time to be pretty valuable, because I have this skill, and that skill is saving other people's lives. I can change whole lives. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to that serenity prayer, the courage to change the things that I can, that changes for me. Mm-hmm. I can go out there and change the community. Where 5 years ago or 8 years ago when I started the program, I couldn't have done that. But now I can, because I'm a working member of society again, and my voice matters. And because I'm in God's will, I can go make those changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That ripple effect is so amazing. Those seeds that we're planting.
Yes.
I always tell people, you know, and a lot of them come in the doors like me, in and out in the beginning. When our, you know, it's like the turkey that's got the popper inside in the oven.
Yeah.
It's not fully popped up yet.
Yeah.
It's just kind of slightly popping. So we see people coming in the doors, and their turkey popper is about half popped up.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it does take it, you know, pain being the touchstone of change. And it does take that jumping off place. It does take, you know, that bottom where you really realize that, hey, I am trapped in this situation.
Yeah.
There is no other way out.
No.
Cornered. And that's how I felt. Cornered.
Yeah.
Absolutely cornered.
Yeah. It's like, and you know, when I got to AA, you know, they didn't want anything from me. And that was really weird, because it just seemed like every time somebody wanted to quote unquote help me, they wanted something, even if it was my insurance card, you know, when money was dealt with or there's expectations, you know. Of course, my mom wanted me to get sober, but she had her own intentions, and I knew that. So it did not work. It wasn't until somebody came along that wanted nothing from me that I heard what they were saying. Mm-hmm. That's when I heard the true nature of my malady.
And there's and that's why I always say this, and it's so powerful, that we don't preach, we don't teach, we only share.
Yeah.
And that's what we do in AA, and we don't listen. You know, we're stubborn alcoholics. We're not going to listen to people. We're smarter than that. We don't. We know that nobody has all the answers.
Yeah.
So it's hard for us to sit in a church and be told what to do.
Yeah.
But we can learn by people using I statements and talking about their own experience, strength, and hope.
Yeah.
And when you guys talk about your experience, strength, and hope, higher power might, you are the angels.
Yeah.
That are put in my path.
And it can't be argued with.
Definitely. It can't be, because it's your own experience, my own experience. And, you know, I think that they talk about, you know, back, you know, in history, and it's, you know, they sat around the campfires and they told the stories, you know.
Yeah.
It was just the stories about, you know, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And, you know, there's also something that I'm interested in and there's a word for it, and it's actually, there's some concrete evidence behind epigenetics.
Okay.
And epigenetics talks about that we carry these things from our ancestors.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, they showed it. They did a test. They did a rat, and they did a startle thing on this rat. Like every time the rat, you know, smelled vanilla, the strong scent of vanilla, they would shock it.
Okay.
Shock it. And they did this for like 2 years. Well, when this rat, they took the rat's sperm and they impregnated another rat in another cage, had the babies, and those babies had the startle effect with the vanilla.
Huh.
certain scent, a certain scent. It would create a startle effect. So it was, that's called epigenetics.
Wow.
And there are things passed down in our genetics.
Yeah. Well, just like elephants. When an elephant has a baby, the baby already knows where the watering hole is.
There you go.
And it's the same kind of thing. Well, alcoholism and diseases can be passed down, even psychological ones. Because I don't know how it all works, but I do know that it happens.
Yeah.
And it isn't a nature versus nurture. It's a nature and nurture. You know, it's a culmination of both. So.
Right. And a perfect example of that would be me, because I was able to stay away from King alcohol for most of my life. I used to pour out my parents' vodka and put water in it. And boy, did I get in trouble for that.
Sure did.
And I was married for 21 years to an alcoholic, strong, heavy drinker. And I did everything I could to stay away from King alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then in my 40s, it finally got me.
Yeah.
But I believe that I had the tendencies my whole life with the sugar.
Yeah.
With all that, you know.
My attitude.
Just the, you know, the feeling different as a child, you know.
That's
that. Feeling different, knowing that you're not comfortable in your own skin. It's kind of it's something that I believe. Yeah, I think you're right. We probably are born with it. And then that, like you said, the nurturing or lack of, you know, just it creates a weak spot in our armor, and King alcohol can get in.
Yep. And it'll
find that's why I have to keep that wall of protective human community.
Yep. Standing in the sunlight of the spirit. Fellowship. And fellowship includes the people in my fellowship and God. Mm-hmm. That includes those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my fellowship.
Yeah.
As an alcoholic, I need to be reminded of this daily. And that's why it's important that, you know, at least for me, I go to a meeting every day. I don't care how I'm feeling. Even when I was sick a few weeks ago, I just turned the camera off. I put Dion just listening. Mm-hmm. Fine. But I got to at least make it to the meeting and be accountable. I think accountability was probably the best thing for me when I first got sober.
Yeah, I think it really helped me too.
And now I'm just accountable. And now that I'm accountable, it goes towards, like what Dr. Bob said, it says this, that, you know, you can set yourself up to succeed too. You know, how do we do that? We'll work with other alcoholics, and that'll help you, you know, help you with a defense against the first drink.
Mm-hmm.
You have any parting words of wisdom for us, Steph?
Well, I was just thinking about how life kind of does these clusters, this I call it cluster fucks.
Yeah.
And like with all that stuff that happened to me 3 weeks ago, it was just like boom, boom, boom. A lot of things were being put in my path, like in a really quick succession.
Yeah.
And I mean, people go through things. I mean, people can, you know, go for years without losing people, and then you can have 5 deaths in 1 year. You know, it can just happen in clumps. It just clumps.
Yeah.
And it just seems like these are teaching moments.
Yeah.
Like what am I, you know? And for me, it has been that a lot of that stuff, that even though I have 7 years in sobriety, a lot of that stuff, that trauma from, let's say, my mastectomy and different things that I buried deep down inside me,
mm-hmm.
are starting to bubble up. As I'm, you know, healing and working my program, these things are bubbling up and starting to come up to the surface. And I think that it is a way of healing.
Absolutely, it is.
I definitely I'm glad that it didn't all hit me when I got sober. I think there's a reason why more is revealed.
That's
because
right.
It would be too much for me to handle when I first got sober.
Absolutely. All the stuff. It would have been too much. And that's why things are done in God's time.
Mm-hmm. And so I had all those clumping things happen, and it was about fear. you know, and sure. It was about fear and just kind of like being able to look at this stuff and it kind of bubbling back up. And this stuff is really not fourth and fifth step stuff. This stuff is sixth and seventh stuff. I can't even say it. Step stuff for me. Yeah. And the sixth step is for me is another third step because it is about the surrendering and leaning into the care of God, the care and the understanding. And that's where, and I believe that that's where my program is right now, that the healing is starting to happen from some of these past traumas in my life. Because I've spent the last 7 years, you know, backing away from hell one day at a time. But now I'm starting to lean in to the care and understanding of my higher power.
And that is the difference between, because they say that pain is the touchstone of healing, but when we do it intentionally, it becomes something better and more beautiful. You don't have to be in pain to change, to decide, to make the decision to change. So when we decide that character building is more important, we win.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. So much of it is acceptance for me.
It is.
It's just so much of it is just acceptance, not resisting everything. And and so many of those like trauma memories that got triggered and things like that, that I thought I had buried down, a lot of them are about acceptance and just accepting. And that's that surrender.
Yeah. Stop fighting. That's what I did.
And it's hard not to fight because you're being hurt.
It is. You know? Exactly. Especially in the beginning and everybody's telling you you're wrong all the time. You're wrong. You're wrong. I know. Just fuck off. I know I'm wrong. Leave me alone.
Yeah. But we're trudging this. We're doing this stuff. Life gets wifey. I'll tell you what. When I got sober, I had a lot of problems. You know, I had a lot of stuff to clean up with the law and, you know, with all my DUIs and a lot of amends to make to my family and my children and, you know, society and that. But now I'm starting to really get deep down into the care and understanding of the higher power.
Now, what you did is you got to a place where you can actually work on these things. Now it's God is doing for me what I couldn't do. I suddenly can handle situations that used to baffle me. And problems are now a little bit exciting because it's a opportunity for me to use my AA techniques again. When we do that, we will thrive.
Lots of tools in this program. Yeah.
Lots of tools.
Lots of tools.
All right.
Yeah.
Woo. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Steph, thanks for taking your time on a Monday afternoon and spending some time with us. I appreciate it. And it's always, I love getting to know people. And wow, what a great conversation this was.
Well, thanks for talking about angels and demons and all kinds of crazy stuff.
That's, you know, everybody has their own experience. And I'm certainly not closed-minded. You know, your experience is your experience. And that makes it fact. And I can't argue with that. I do believe in a lot of these things. You know, how do we bring up the devil in AA? You know, because we talk about God. So I've always wondered that myself too, but it just makes it feel too religion-y. And
yeah, it seems to be a big no-no. Like that's supposed to just be like our ego or something. And I'm like, I don't know.
I can't. And denial is not a river in Africa. So,
Thank
you, everybody, for being here. As to my audience, man, we had a lot of great discussions today, and I'm sure we're going to hear some great comments about this. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I love you. You know I do.
Thank you.
Peace out and have a day. Bye-bye.